We are live in the Super Bowl Media Row. We're hanging out, and we got Super Bowl talk to break down. What would a three-peat actually mean? Is Andy Reid already the greatest coach in NFL history? Plus, what does this mean for the winner and the loser? It is all Super Bowl all the time, and it starts right now in Inside Coverage. We are coming at you live from New Orleans. We are still here. We are still surviving. It is time for Inside Coverage as we get ready for Super Bowl 59. Charles Robinson, Jory Epstein, Frank Schwab. I am Jason Fitz. You guys know the deal. We are at the Toyota Land Cruiser set at Super Bowl 59. And guys, we've been here a few days, right? We're going to break down the game. The goal over the course of the next hour is to give you everything you need to know about everything from this game. And not that you haven't heard it a million times, but we'll give you the latest, greatest from what we see. But let me start in a very simple spot. See, Rob, has anything, you've done this. How many Super Bowls have you been to in person?
Oh, you kidding me? I had a count before.
About how many Super Bowls?
So let's see. 04 was my first. I skipped a couple in between. 20. So 20, 22, somewhere in there.
Has anything so far this week stood out and made you think, wow, this feels drastically different?
It's probably the first time I can remember, and we kind of talked about this on the last show, where both teams were, neither was starry-eyed, was like, you know, I told you I thought the Chiefs kind of, for lack of a better, I don't know if I'd say they were bored, but they're just like, let's go. And that the Eagles, as Frank said, are very just like business locked in, like, okay, it's not going to be like it was last time. So it's the first time I can remember maybe both teams were just like, let's get to the game and dispense with everything else.
Well, and that sort of blends to something Frank and I talked about earlier today. Like, the overall aura around this thing is like, there is so much been there, done that for so many people. Yeah. It feels like it hits a little
bit. And I think
right
for
now,
people who are ready to tune in or listening to the show, reading our stuff, this wasn't the matchup anybody wanted. I think we're going to get a great, great game. But to me, of all the, this is number 11 for me. Thanks for asking.
You're welcome. Right.
I think there's the least amount of buzz leading up to
Frank,
it.
Interestingly enough, Super Bowl tickets are plummeting.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
They've been terrible this week. I mean, it's like, I think they're at like, the get-in price is like $3,500 today, which is not, it's not cheap for a ticket, but that's the cheapest since 2019.
Do we think that's just Chiefs fatigue?
I think it's, well, I mean, you talk to brokers and they'll tell you they think it's Chiefs fatigue. They think it's, like, hotel inflation's been a really big deal this year. But, you know, even Eagles fatigue, like, this is the third Super Bowl in a short period of time. Chiefs fans are, like, tapped out at this point. Like,
If you're ever going to go to a Super Bowl as a Chiefs fan, and you've done it already.
There's even this idea that, like, some Chiefs fans are like, well, we're kind of in the middle of our run. Like, this isn't the end. It's not like when we were like, oh, this might be the last time you see Tom Brady in a Super Bowl.
I don't think either team feels their windows closing. Right. For example, had the Rams gone all the way? Matthew Stafford, Cooper Kupp, you might have had that last one. When they had Aaron Donald last time, it was coming to an end. But that doesn't feel that way in Philadelphia and Kansas City.
That's a really good point, Joy. How many Super Bowls for you?
This is number 5 for me, and it would have been 6 if I didn't get COVID at the Senior Bowl one year and have to cancel trip.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's a setback.
If you're going to get COVID, get it at a dive bar in Mobile, Alabama, Source Building.
Ooh, that is go, Veets. Not just back at Joy. Out of the Super Bowl.
Feels
see,
like
I instantly knew which bar was.
Feels like the beginning of a really bad country song. Okay, I got COVID in Mobile, Alabama. I don't know. Let's talk Super Bowl, okay? And because what everybody's trying to figure out is how does this go from being Rocky to Rocky 2? Like, Jory, that's a pop culture reference to a movie called Rocky. It was about a boxer.
I run the Rocky steps when I go to Philadelphia.
Have you seen it, though?
Have you seen Rocky?
Have you seen Rocky? Any of the Rockies?
Parts of some of them that I have not seen start to finish.
Oh, my goodness.
We never followed through on the tying her to a chair and making her watch all these pop culture movies.
Is this the chair I'm going to be tied to? That seems like it.
No, that's a comfy
chair. Ciro gave me his extra pillow before we started.
We don't have to tie you to the chair. We just scoot you all the way to the back because your feet won't touch the floor. You can't leave.
Hey, there will be no mockery for feet not touching the floor because I am sitting way up in this chair right now.
Last year at the Super Bowl, I had to put my backpack on my seat so that I could see over my computer. See her, I was cracking up because I'm like, awesome. He couldn't.
That is, okay, that's electric and that's amazing. So Rocky is a very famous movie, but Rocky lost at the end of the original movie. In Rocky 2, the sequel, Rocky wins at the end.
Oh, 2 is
spoiler
the sequel. That's how sequels work. Okay.
Yeah, sorry, I'm sorry. I just ruined Rocky for everybody.
Defining the word sequel.
We were going to watch it tonight, finally, for the first time. I appreciate it.
You're going to be very bored when you're tied to the chair having to watch Rocky 2 and you know what happens. But the question is, how is the rematch, how does it end up differently? And I just, I do have to scream, C-Rob, as much as we've talked about the similarities in these two teams, different offensive coordinator for the Eagles, different defensive coordinator for the, like, the brands are the same, but the people are very different.
Yeah, particularly for the Eagles. You know, I would argue it's a more experienced team in terms of the younger players having played in bigger games now. I think defensively they're better. You know, Jalen Carter, you know, is a big difference in the middle for this. I mean, it's a potential defensive player of the year type of guy that now is in the middle of that defense. You know, Zach Bond, first team all pro. You know, there's just, it's the corners, you know, Cooper DeJean. I mean, I think so many, Quinion Mitchell, there's so many elements stacked in for the Eagles that weren't necessarily there talent-wise the first time around. And then obviously, you know, Saquon Barkley, that was something they went out to solve specifically. Here's a problem we see. Jory and I talked to Howie Roseman about that. That's what they went out, you know, to solve with Saquon Barkley, fix the offense in a way that they knew would work, be predictable, and was prepared for this kind of game. So to me, that's the difference, really.
And it's funny because when we were with Howie the other night, someone asked him if this was the most talented team he's had. And he was a little hesitant to say that because he said that before the last Super Bowl and he didn't think it went well for him. That said, this is a way more talented Eagles team than came to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. I think the Chiefs are similarly talented and the Eagles upgraded at a key skill position, upgraded at defense. When you think about one of the defensive strengths of the Chiefs, it's not just the personnel. It's what Spags is doing, calling the plays. And now the Eagles have their Spags and Vic Fangio, and he's having a great year. And so I think when you put that together, this is going to look different. And the Eagles have all of the pieces to win. It's just when we had to file our predictions today, I'm like, who's betting against Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid?
Yeah, it was tough.
I want to, but I can't.
I do think the Eagles, we talked a lot about Eagles changes. The Chiefs are a lot different, too. I mean, 2 years ago, they won this game 38-35. They haven't scored 38 points in a game all year. They only scored more than 30 once, I believe, and it was against the Bills, I believe, in the AFC Championship game when they needed it. You're right. But this is a much – and I can't remember another dynasty changing during the dynasty so much. Maybe you could argue the Patriots, but that was this weird 20-year dynasty. Like, yes, but in such a short amount of time, they've gone from this offensive juggernaut to a defensive first team, yeah, really.
Absolutely.
And that makes this game a lot different. And I think it plays into the Eagles' hand a little bit more. The Eagles don't want to pass the ball. They don't want to get into a high-scoring game. They want to grind it out with the running game and defense. So I think just the styles of the fight, if we're going back to the Rocky reference, that it favors the Eagles a little bit more this time because it's not going to be some shootout.
We'll see it in the way we talk about it today because a big part of what I think leads to an Eagles win, or excuse me, a Kansas City win, is Spags, right? Like, he's a much larger part of what they have to do in this game to win. And again, we're going to get to that. But whereas the first time around, you knew Patrick Mahomes, the offense could carry.
I don't think that way now. I mean, the Chiefs skill position guys, it's like, who's really going to break the Eagles back in this one? Kareem Hunt?
Do you need more than Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce?
Well, we'll see.
I think so.
We'll
see, I guess. Yes. But this is, it's just a much, much different Chiefs team than I think it was 2 years ago.
So stick there. Let's go straight to it because you mentioned Spags and we're going to talk about it.
Right.
What does Spags have to do in this game?
Well, we're going to ask the question, like, how do you stop Saquon Barkley, right? And I mean, that's really what he's wired into. When you talk to Spags about it, what he says is it's not any one thing. Like, it's not, I can't just tell you, here's one thing you can't do. So he's not going to just tell you, well, hey, you know, you can't have cover zero shell coverage, right? There's certain elements of, you know, like scheme wise, you can't just say, well, we changed the scheme and that's different. So I think there's a number of things that they're going to try to tie together here. I think, you know, Spags, it's 18 straight postseason games without a 100-yard rusher against Spags, which
is
crazy.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow,
that's crazy.
I did not know that.
That's insane.
That's
stat.
Incredible.
Yeah. And so I think it's Drew Tranquil and Nick Bolton are both going to have to be fresh in this game. I think you got to run the this is how it's tied together. You got to run the football with Kareem Hunt, Isaiah Pacheco. You have to keep Philly off the field as much as possible to keep people fresh. I think, you know, Tranquil, Bolton and Chris Jones have to work in concert. Somebody's got to take on a fat guard and let him sit on you so you can go and make the tackle. Saquon Barkley, don't tackle him high. Make sure it's waist down, right? Because nobody's stopping this guy. Tackling him high, it's just layered. It's a lot of different things, I think, that play into it. And then one other thing that I will bring up about Spags, and Frank and I talked about this before, when the Giants beat that undefeated Patriots team in the Super Bowl, stopped them from going 19-0, the one thing Spags did in that game that I think was amazing he started rolling Justin Tucker and N inside to defensive tackle. The Patriots lost their mind. They could not handle that, and it wrecked the game. I wonder what Spags has up his sleeve to kind of alter the front of that defense.
I'm so glad Sierra mentioned that stat about not allowing in a 100-yard rusher in 18 games, because when we had to file our predictions today, we, in addition to winner, we had a few other questions, including, will Saquon Barkley rush for 100 yards? And I ended up picking the Chiefs to win, but Saquon to rush for 100 yards, but Chris Jones to be the MVP. And I'm kind of like, well, how does this all work? How is Saquon rushing for 100 yards, but Chris Jones being the MVP? And I think what it comes down to is, I expect Saquon to have some sort of house call, some sort of big play he rips off, probably a few. But when it comes down to it, can he do it consistently enough against this defense? And the other reason I think that Chris Jones could be MVP with Saquon still going off is one of the stories I'm working on for this week that should be filed later.
Points to our editor. It'll be filed later, I promise.
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming. One of the stories I'm working on is just the idea of, do we think of great quarterbacking too much as only great passing and only great arm strength? And what else goes into the quarterback position? I've been asking Chiefs and Eagles coaches and players this a lot. And I think when I think about it, it's not just about the scrambling being part of quarterbacking. Everything Jalen Hurts does, both in the threat that he's constantly creating and being a plus one against the defense as a runner, and even the way he's running play action, always having that RPO threat, that is part of what Saquon does. And so if Chris Jones and the Chiefs defense can make Jalen uncomfortable, that impacts Saquon. Yeah. That's why I think the quarterback is way more, quarterbacking requires getting the run game going, because if the quarterback doesn't get it started, even if Saquon's carrying it, he's not starting with the ball.
Yeah. And Chris Jones is that kind of guy that he can speed up the clock with a quarterback. Yeah. Right? Like that's the nightmare, is when your quarterback gets off schedule, maybe not slow, but fast, tries to make too many decisions too quickly, starts to make the wrong decisions. And Chris Jones is that type of player that can speed up that clock, and then the next thing you know, he's making the wrong calls in the RPOs.
And I think we talked a lot about Saquon 100 yards. I think that's, even though with that Spag stat,
sure,
anybody really thinks Saquon's not getting 100 yards in this game? No. But I think that he's that takes different,
especially
shapes
from scrimmage.
But
part of that too is he can get 60 of that in one play.
Right.
Like if they send something at him and he busts through, he's got 60 of it in one run, and then all of a sudden we're hammering the over.
It's what shape does this take? Is this multiple 50-yard runs, or is it 7 yards every single time he's carrying the ball and they're always ahead of the sticks? So I think that Saquon can have 100, to your point, Saquon can have 100 yards, and the Chiefs can still win this game. I think the key is just, how does Jalen Hurts play? Because he's going to have to make plays. This Eagles team, last in the league in pass attempts. They don't want to pass the ball, but I think the Chiefs will be able to force them into, hey, Jalen, you got to make some plays. And what did we see 2 years ago in the Super Bowl? Jalen Hurts was awesome in that Super Bowl. He was the best player on the field. I honestly still think he should have won Super Bowl MVP, as weird as that sounds from a losing team. He was that good. He was a good vote, because I thought he was amazing in that game. He was the best player on the field. So I don't think he's going to be necessarily rattled by anything. But I think that the job for Spags is not necessarily even Saquon. Like, Saquon's going to get his. It's, what does Jalen do? Does Jalen beat you? And I think that's the question Eagles are going to have to answer.
I still think the where, how, and when of Saquon getting his is a big deal in this, because we'll go back to that stat we continually talk about, and I've mentioned a million times. Mahomes has had the ball in his hands 7 times in his career in the playoffs or Super Bowl, needing a score to tie or win with under 4 minutes to go. 7 times he's gotten the touchdown.
Unbelievable.
The Eagles are going to have to run the football to chew off the end of the clock. Yeah. Like, the best case scenario in this game, they're going to have to get running yardage out of him.
And it was interesting, because that was a point at one point that Howie Roseman made, like, really late in his session. It had kind of thinned out. There weren't a lot of people around. And I thought, it was interesting. I kind of thought there was an admission there, because he thought they were going to win the first Super Bowl, right? And what he didn't know then was, you have to beat the Chiefs in the fourth quarter to win.
Yes.
Like, that's when this is a fourth quarter team. They beat you in the fourth quarter, Patrick Mahomes. Who has the ball last? You better hope it's you, because it can't be him. He always converts. He beats you in the fourth quarter. And I think that's one of those things that the Chiefs probably, or the Eagles know now that they didn't necessarily know then. Do not let him have that deciding drive in the fourth quarter, because he will beat you.
And the Chiefs defense will be ready for that. Like, there is a reason why 11 of their 15 regular season wins came by one score or less, so 8 points or less. Like, they are always ready in that moment. And I think when you look at it, also, if you look at Saquon's carries, he ends up averaging an excellent yard per carry each game. But when you take out the explosive plays, which obviously are part of it and obviously should be part of it, he's not getting that many yards per carry on the non-explosive plays. And so that's where it could come into it at the end of the game. If you're saying, well, I need you to get those 4 yards instead of those 2.5, because we need to get first downs and move the ball and we don't want to have to pass, that's a problem.
Which is also why, as much as people yell about the tush push, brotherly shove, or whatever you call it, like, that plays a huge part in the fourth quarter of this football
game. That's what I was
going to
say.
I'm
yep.
genuinely curious to see if the Eagles have the you-know-whats to be aggressive on a fourth and short in a one-score game, knowing that they got to convert that in order to keep Mahomes off the field. But if they don't convert it, they're giving Mahomes a short field. Like, I think this becomes an important part. When are they in four-down territory in this game, and how do they get a yard when they need a yard?
Jalen Hurts was asked yesterday about being successful on fourth down and if it's his favorite down, and he said, yeah, I love when I have to make it happen. I have to do that.
And especially if it's fourth and short. Like, it almost is useless to talk about it because it's so automatic for the Eagles. Do the Chiefs have any answer at all for the tush push? Because it just turns the game into this, you're constantly playing four downs. You know that the Eagles and Chiefs are very aggressive on fourth down, going for it. You know you're going to have to stop that offense for four downs. That's hard to do, and especially when if they get in a third and one, fourth and one, it's just they're going to convert. Like, you just kind of throw up your hands and say, what can we do? I don't know if the Chiefs have any. Nobody else has had an answer for it.
What you want to do is make it fourth and two or longer.
Yeah, where they can't do the tush push.
But it's
a massive difference because it is the most automatic play in the NFL. They just do it better than everybody else.
If this game is decided by the tush push over and over and over again in the fourth quarter, which, by the way, is Eagles fans would rejoice. Mahomes never gets the ball back in his hands. Is that the moment that the league looks at it? I don't think the league's ever going to look at it. You guys are plugged in. Tell me what that would take.
Two reasons. One, it's a legal football play. You can be better at things, and that doesn't make it illegal. It's not like, okay, again, story I will be turning in tomorrow, allegedly, is about...
Your editor can't hear this right now. He's just lie.
I know our audience is going to be like, he's
seriously,
work.
There's no headset on. He's like, it seems like Joy's lying a lot. I can't tell, though.
Yeah, he's just like getting a little antsy over there. But that story is going to be about this investment in the lines of scrimmage. And one of the big philosophies I have is that Andy Reid's fingerprints are all over both teams, even though he hasn't been in Philly for a while and he hasn't actually worked with most of the players on this roster. Because Andy, when I asked Howie Roseman the other day, when in your career did you philosophically believe in, like, consistently investing in the line of scrimmage? Like, obviously everyone wants to do it. Not everybody does it. And he talked about Andy Reid, a former offensive lineman, having those conversations with him about how it makes everything so much easier. Chiefs people keep telling me Andy tells the entire team every single week, I think multiple times a week, not just the offensive line, this game will be won or lost with you guys, pointing to the offensive line and defensive line. And I think when you look at it, something like the tush push, like, this is okay because it's working because of their offensive line. I actually thought this year they'd have a lot more trouble with it because they lost their center and Jason Kelsey.
Yep.
And look at what they've done. That offensive line has not fallen off, both because of the ways that they've been consistently developing them, and they have the best offensive line coach in the league.
I don't know how
Jeff Stoutland's not an offensive coordinator. Yeah. I would want him if I were.
I think the biggest discrepancy between these two teams is the offensive lines. Eagles might have the best offensive line in football. Probably do.
Yeah.
The Chiefs have some issues on a tackle, especially. I think there's a very, very real possibility where after the game Sunday, we're talking about, hey, Eagles line took over this game, and the Chiefs line just let up way too much pressure. That's been a problem for them all year.
The one Super Bowl we've seen the Chiefs lose.
Right.
Why did they lose that game? Like,
the
they
line.
Got dominated on the offensive line. And I think that's something that if we all had revisionist history going back, look at that Bucs team, we undersold that portion of the game. I don't want to do that again. The problem is I can stack my bricks all day long on why the Eagles are a better football team. And does it really matter? Like, I don't want to, like, I want to give people a better, I truly do want to be able to sit here and say, okay, this, but I don't know how you bet against what is currently happening for the Chiefs.
On the note of that, I'm so happy you said that, because yesterday when Patrick Mahomes was at the podium and we were talking to him, someone asked him if there is a moment that keeps him up at night, and zero hesitation, he said, Super Bowl loss at Tampa, that's easy.
That line.
And he thinks about that.
That offensive line was so terrible in that game.
They were so beat up.
Interesting thing about the Chiefs too, though, and I didn't think about this until we had to make picks, and it was like, okay, you know, who are the offensive pieces that are going to make a difference for the Chiefs? Like, it's not, I know Kelsey's there, obviously, but it's not like there's, beyond Kelsey, like, who are you concentrating on? There's no, you know, what do they always say about the nail that sticks up, it gets hammered? Other than Kelsey, who are you hammering? It could be anybody. It's all about who Mahomes decides that game. Like, am I going to, you know, is it going to be a Hollywood Brown game?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is it going to be a Juju game? Is it going to be a Xavier? Yeah,
Worthy's the one. He's been the one coming along,
right,
and he's the one that can. If there's one dude on that offense, and I don't think it's Kelce anymore, who's just going to break the game open
because of the speed, right?
Because of the speed,
which is such a bummer for the nerds who are like, he's just fast in the 40. It's not going to translate. Okay. And then Xavier Worthy told me at that point when I talked to him for a story,
yeah,
he said, I can run routes beforehand. I don't lose my ability to run routes because I'm fast.
His development has been a lot like Rashee Rice, and not that they're anywhere near the same player, obviously,
but
Rashee took so long to get going, and by this time in the season last year, Rashee was their best player. I see a lot of the same with Xavier Worthy, where he was just a ghost for 3 months, and then all of a sudden he's getting better and better, and now he's a big deal coming in the Super Bowl. I think that's the guy. I think that's the guy the Eagles have to worry about is what do we do with Xavier Worthy?
Every once in a while, Jory just gives a little punch to
somebody. Yeah, we fun little story. Once when I was younger, one of my siblings said something not so nice to me, not so nice language, and I went to my dad and I was like, "We don't use that language in our house." And he's like, "And what zinger did you say in clean language that was just as hurtful?"
That's so. So we've grew up in very different households. That's what I just learned. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to break down over the course of the show what this would mean for the Chiefs and what it would mean for the Eagles. We'll do the Kansas City side of it. Players. Plus, I'm going to push back on something we've already said about Kelce, but first
feisty
we'll take a quick
Thursday.
It's Feisty Thursday. Take a quick break. So I want to get into what all of this would mean for Kansas City. But first, there was an interesting nugget today. And if you haven't checked out all of the content on Yahoo Sports, you should. We've been interviewing everybody, right? We've been interviewing everybody. And I had a really good conversation with George Kittle. I would recommend everybody go check it out. But before, during, and after the interview, I had three different times to talk to Kittle about Travis Kelce. And the funny thing is, Kittle kept stressing the fact that for everybody that says that Kelce's down because the numbers don't look the same, first and foremost, said, you know, he had about 25 catches more than I did this season. Secondly, he said, if you watch the film, he's still putting on a clinic. He's still the best at what he does. Every single tight end we talked to today gave Kelce the nod as the best guy currently, not overall, but like right now, who's the best tight end in the NFL? They all said Kelce. We're sitting here saying that Kelce is broken. I'm not broken.
We're talking about best in the NFL.
Way better than no.
I mean, Kelce's one of the greatest of all time. And could he come up with a 100-yard game here? Sure, why not?
He doesn't need to come up with a 100-yard game, but could he come up with two touchdowns in this game? Hell yeah.
Maybe. That would be big.
Well,
but I don't think Philly comes in this game.
C-Rob just
that nervous about him.
What he showed up. He was out of shape this year. And he showed up.
He's 34 this year.
He had fun in the offseason. Okay.
Taylor Swift tours a lot of fun.
There are certain things going on in his life that, you know, are a lot of fun right now. He's celebrating, enjoying himself, traveling. I thought this year he was on the Ben Roethlisberger plan. Really? Like, he showed up. It was like, okay, he's not in football shape. He's not in his best shape.
The Shaquille O'Neal way.
You know, you go in and Ben would tell you, I work myself into shape as we go. I'm like, okay, all right.
How many yards do you think Kelce has?
I think he's a better player the second half of this season than the first.
Sure.
So I think if you take the second half of the season and just replicate it, you're going to get a more accurate view on what really.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, he was good.
You're just an ageist.
He
you hate
not,
everybody when they get a certain age.
I'm an old man myself. Yeah. I know how hard it is.
You spent the summer going to Taylor Swift concerts. You'd have been out of shape when you came in, too. Go ahead.
When I was working on my All-Pro ballot, I was reaching out to different coaches who had played against these tight ends, trying to be like, okay, Brock Bowers, George Kittle, Travis Kelce, which do you think? And they really were way higher on Brock Bowers than I thought they would be. Not that I thought they would. I was just like, you're getting
this
so many more targets.
tell me more.
I was surprised because I was like, he's getting so many more targets, but is what he's doing at a higher level, or is there just nobody else on that team? So I think in the regular season, and that was interesting, Sierra, and I had some of these conversations, the difference between all pro versus MVP defensive player, et cetera. Some of this is about what you're doing in the regular season, and some of this is how you're most going to help a team in the playoffs. I think that the best players, like this is why with the Bills versus Chiefs, I think the Bills will beat them most often in the regular season as they have. But the Chiefs and Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes go to another level in the playoffs. I also think going back to Frank's point on this idea of a team evolving during its dynasty, I think the best teams, yes, the Chiefs happened to win 15-2. I mean, they won 15 games this year, which the Patriots often didn't do that. But the best teams, the Sean McVays this year, Bill Belichick in previous years, they're not winning games at the beginning of the season because they know if they stay the same when it comes January, they're out. But if they evolve and they have the growing pains in September and October, by January, they'll be at that level with a new plan that people didn't anticipate last year and be able to rise.
It's it's all going to be very interesting to see how it plays out for Kelce because, you know, he's still, to me, the game wrecker. He's still the game wrecker that he's always been for one game. I may not want to I may not want to sit here and rely on Travis Kelce week in and week out, but I'll rely on him for
now,
one.
Wait, another thing, too, though, we have to be fair. You lose Rashee Rice, right? He would have been your wide receiver one, clearly. Like, mm-hmm. that's where he was going in, you know, this season. And again, it falls to Kelce to be, I mean, he's the guy, right? Tyreek Hill goes out the door, he's the guy, right? Like, well, as Xavier Worthy has become a larger part of the offense, you take away some of Kelce's opportunities, but not for a bad reason because you have, it's like Detroit. People are like, why did Sam Laporta have this? He was a killer as a rookie. And then he started slow this year. And I'm like, is anyone looking at Jameson Williams' targets? Like, yeah, there's a reason.
Right.
The offense shifted. But again, you get into these situations. And like Jory said, I mean, I think there are certain players where you know when something's got to happen, when I know we have to make a play here, maybe he only catches four balls for 48 yards. I'll bet you it'll be consequential.
I do too. Yeah, they'll probably get first outs. You know the one guy who you're saying that, but who I think is going to show up in this game all of a sudden is DeAndre Hopkins. I think that they've been kind of waiting, and he's been great this week talking about, hey, I don't care if I get the ball or not. I'm here to win. I've been a number one receiver. I didn't win anything because of it. And I think that if there's one X factor in this game, I think it's DeAndre. I think DeAndre shows up in this one.
Odell Beckham Jr. showed some of that a couple years ago before he got hurt in the Super Bowl against the Bengals. But I do think there's something. But to Syrup's point, I remember last year going through at one point Travis Kelce's catches, and it was maybe, six or seven catches, but all of them were for a first down or touchdown. And so they're not all going to be scores, but the number that are going to move the chains, and it's like, hey, when it comes to backyard football and Mahomes just needs somebody who's super in sync with him, Travis is the guy.
Yeah, I remember a game a couple years ago. It's the Raiders. He had four catches for four touchdowns. That's my reality. Reality here is
we're but it's okay because Brock Bowers is great Brock during Bowers. This
he's
season.
Better. He's better. We're at the Toyota Land Cruiser set at Super Bowl 59 on Inside Coverage. And I was actually, I'm not usually a guy that loves a historical context conversation. I'm going to be honest. I don't really give a damn about history most of the time. When sports history, I'm like, I'd rather live in the moment for the future. But I was actually really curious about this, especially, and I'll go to Frank first on this because you do know, love, and absorb history. What's the right conversation around a three-peat and what it means historically?
I think it you have to wonder if the Chiefs are the greatest dynasty of all time, and I'm not just talking about football either. I think you'd have to compare this all of a sudden to UCLA basketball or the Celtics and what they've done in the salary cap era is so impressive. And I think the only team you could compare them to NFL, I think they pass the 70s Steelers, they pass the 60s Packers, they pass the 80s Niners, because you've gone five times in 6 years, you would have won three in a row, which it should be impossible in the NFL. That many extra games, salary cap, all this stuff. The only other one it compares to is the Patriots, because the Patriots did it for about 20 years, which is just ridiculous.
And yet the Patriots never won three in a row.
And the Patriots never won three in a row because the Philly got them in the middle. Yeah.
The crossover to other sports is really interesting. I hadn't really considered that, but when you think about just the sheer attrition of football.
Yeah, but you can't compare. And the Celtics won 11 and 13, but that was eight teams in the NBA, I believe, at that point. The NFL is set up so this should never happen. Like, three in a row should never happen.
Right, because as I say all the time on this podcast, if you're playing baseball, basketball, all these other sports, hockey, 4 out of 7 or whatever the round is,
that's true,
you
yes.
eliminate mm-hmm. a lot of the variability. And the best team is more likely to win when you're playing 4 out of 7 than when you're playing game.
If Reggie Miller's Pacers play the Jordan Bulls once, they might win. You ain't going to beat them in 7 games, though, and that's a great point. So I view this as, look, even if they lose, they might be the greatest dynasty of all time, given what they've done. And even getting back here a third time is impressive. But if you win, and they might not be done. Who's to say they can't win a fourth? Like, that's how this whole dynasty is going for them.
But
it's really
impressive. How do we factor the total number? Because I agree with you. I agree with everything you just said. Now, I want to say loudly, I think you're right. I think this does become the most impressive.
That's so nice.
But, well, I mean, we always yell when we think each other are wrong. But what do we do with more? Yeah, because, I joked with Teddy Bruschi today when I talked to him, and he wears a Super Bowl ring, and I was like, which one do you wear? And he said, I only wear the first one. After that, they just sit in the safe. And, like, it's just, there are so many rings to be had by so many Patriots players. They had so many of them. How do we judge the length of what the Patriots did with the sheer mass quantity versus what we're seeing right now, which is
It's not done yet.
No, that's fair.
I mean, you're asking a question about a math equation we haven't worked out. It's not finished.
Well, I was told there would be no math.
Yeah.
It's also interesting.
You only have to count to three, Frank, on this
the
one.
Chiefs dynasty, and then there's Andy Reid's legacy. And to me, I think that even if the Chiefs dynasty maybe quite isn't at Patriots level yet because of the sustained success. Andy Reid might be at that Belichick point, especially if he can win three in a row. There are definitely people in the league who think that. Obviously, it's a conversation. But what's interesting also is going back to what I was saying about Andy Reid's fingerprints on this Eagles team. How many teams outside of the Patriots do you feel like Bill Belichick significantly influenced and were making it to the Super Bowl and having the level of success?
They sent Matt Patricia over to the Lions, you know?
So I think when you think of Andy Reid, both what he did with his own teams and the way that he left a positive imprint schematically and from a personnel standpoint on other teams, there is a conversation to be had.
Oh, all of a sudden, Andy's Philly days look a lot better. Like, you look back and you're like, you know what? No, they didn't break through, but now he's proven he can win a big game. And boy,
and he trained Howie Roseman to build a heck of a team.
That's the point that I think, you know, we'll loudly continue to scream that it is important. Like, I work a lot with Anthony Gargano, who's been in the Philly market forever, and he's been saying this for a minute, that like, hey, the Eagles currently are still under the fingerprints.
Yeah.
Like,
Howie says that, too. Howie told us that the other day. I mean, again, when I asked him about the offensive line stuff, he said, Andy Reid taught me. And then at the beginning of the interview, when Sierra and I were there, someone asked him about Andy Reid, and he said something along the lines of, who I think might be one of the best coaches in all of NFL history. And then, by the end of it, it had evolved to who I think is the best NFL coach of all time. He was more emphatic. And he's not, and again, it wasn't a knock on Nick Sirianni. They're obviously very different people and have different roles. But I do think that there are people, including Howie Roseman, who is biased, but still interesting for him to say it out loud, who believe that about Andy Reid.
I think that's an interesting point when you talk about the trickle down, because I don't know. It feels weird. If you're just injecting truth serum in my job, if we're out at a party tonight and I've had too much to drink, as the guy that doesn't drink anymore, and I've had too much to drink.
Why can't you just tell us the truth under normal circumstances?
Because I really always have to do all these things. Because I want serum.
He's always
like
saying,
Andy Reid,
if you did this
back,
to me and I had to tell you the truth, how about you just tell us the truth? We're your friends.
You know, okay, fine.
Yeah. You always ask why you're not in the group text, and maybe it's because you always tell us you're not going to just straight up tell us the honesty unless we compromise.
You know, here's the thing that we just learned. They're admitting openly I'm still not in the group text. I mean, we've been working together this long. And then
good
we
job,
hang out
Joy.
And they're like, I like you
way
so
to bring
much.
That up again.
You can take my spot.
You can take
oh,
my hair
off. I thought with those headphones he couldn't hear us.
I don't even get the sympathy accidental side text. That doesn't come. No, there's just talk of the text. It's fine. I'm not hurt at all. No.
The best part is that he knows he's actually in the group text.
No, I'm not in the group. I'm there.
The
no,
green bubble weirdos.
The green, that's a different group text. You guys have a game day group. Okay, we'll talk about the game day group text later. I feel dirty saying that I believe at this point. It doesn't feel comfortable or right after what I've seen from the Patriots for so many years saying this. But I just, my eyes tell me what my eyes tell me now. I feel like Andy Reid is the best coach of all time. I feel like the Chiefs are the best team of all time. I feel like Steve Spagnuolo has turned himself into the best defensive coordinator of all time. And I believe today that Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback of all time. And that doesn't mean that Tom Brady isn't the winningest quarterback of all time. I believe that Mahomes will catch that, and I believe that Mahomes will surpass that. So all of this, when the book report is done, I believe this will all be written.
Let me ask you this. Who has gotten away from Patrick Mahomes and succeeded? Let's do the Patriots test. Who got away from Tom? Who left the nest and didn't have Tom anymore? And didn't have
we're
Andy anymore?
Coaches?
Yeah, and succeeded at a high level.
No way.
Okay, so we're there. So when we get to the end of Andy's run or Patrick's run or whoever, you know what's going to happen. We're going to have the conversation about, was it Andy or was it Pat?
Oh my God.
Was it Andy or was it Pat?
Yes.
You know what, Frank? It's okay. That's what happens in marriages. Everybody always has to pick a side, okay?
That's what happens?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
We always picked against you, Frank.
Yeah.
So just so you know.
That's good to know.
I pick with you, Frank. I'm with you.
But one of the fascinating elements of this debate is that they're not both on the same side of the ball. And so the impact Andy's had on Patrick Mahomes is not going to be the same as the impact that Belichick had on Tom Brady. Now, I don't think that Belichick didn't influence Tom Brady heavily, both in terms of the way he pushed him and all those stories of never being good enough for Bill. But I also think there's this element of like, hey, he's calling plays in tandem with Patrick. So it's never going to be apples to apples.
Bill always thought he was an offensive coordinator too. So I mean,
that's why he hired a special teams guy to be his offensive coordinator.
Exactly.
Who needs an offensive coordinator?
He didn't even want to name an offensive coordinator one year. He wanted to be offensive coordinator. It was the year that McDaniels was going to go out the door to Indy. I think it was in Seth Wickersham's book that Bill was like, I'll just
be
offensive coordinator.
That sounds familiar.
Like,
yeah.
I would love to see a game with him calling plays on the offensive side. Maybe in North Carolina, we'll get to see it.
I also believe that part of this that we've got to look at for what all this means, fine. But for the future, Like, there's a lot of football left for Kansas City. And if everything continues to break this way, nothing's going to change the fact that they have the greatest coach of all time, the greatest quarterback of all time. It doesn't look like Spags is going anywhere. I don't know why, but it looks like they're going to continue to have the best defensive coordinator of all time and one of the best GMs of all time.
I'll ask you three this question. And I always put it in the Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus vein. Because when Tiger came out, we watched, he just tore it up. And we're like, oh my God, he's going to do it. He's going to capture more majors than Jack. He's going to be it. He's going to be the greatest guy ever. Took a big left turn in the middle of Tiger's career, right? Physically, personally, a lot of stuff happened in Tiger's life, but whatever.
You got through that without making a Tiger joke. I'm impressed. There are so many in your mind, I know.
It stopped him short. Give me a golf club and I'll do this SUV, what happened to his car in the middle
Sponsored
of that.
Sponsored by Toyota.
Smash out a couple windows. Anyway.
Sponsored by Toyota. Is that an option?
All right, so let's say for the Chiefs, We're in the middle. This is like the middle of the Tiger run. We're like, oh, it's going to happen. Like, this is crazy. Like, the youth is there. The dominance is there. The runway looks like it's wide open. Say they fall short. Say Patrick wins 5 Super Bowls, right?
Only
Tom
5.
Tom won 7, right? Let's say, okay, he won 5, but let's say he gets 3 in a row, but he falls short of Tom's 7, right? Say Andy wins 4 or 5. Does that, do we just default back? Like, is it like the Tiger argument? We're like, well, Jack, you know,
he held him off.
That's why Jack Nicklaus was Jack. And you know, is it that's why the Patriots are the Patriots?
That's why I think Tom's gonna,
because we're
be
all sitting here saying, oh,
forever.
They're gonna be the best ever. They're gonna, because we're in the middle of
that's
it.
A great
but
point.
Aren't they the best ever? Like, right now.
But
like,
that's the point, is that we are doing, it's a what have you done for me lately league, and we're kind of playing
what if it
into
stops
that
here?
Of like,
that's what I'm saying.
Okay
what if it stops
I'm okay
here?
With it.
You think it's the best ever?
I think right now, I've never in my life witnessed a more unstoppable quarterback than Patrick Mahomes to me. Like, no matter what you
he
do, he beats you.
From a burned Raiders fan perspective. Okay?
No, I respect the greatness of it. Like, I think, you know, at some point.
Yeah, he's like, I don't like my owner.
Well, I mean, these are all true things. I am a burned Raiders fan. I don't like my owner. Sorry, Mark.
I meant Tom.
No, Tom. Oh, no, I'm all in for Tom. I don't care. Anything's better than Mark.
the operating owner.
You sit here and you watch it in, I don't know, like college football, they say it too much, but the eye test. Like, the eye test of this is just unbelievable. And the year that the Patriots decided they were going to be all in on being in an explosive offense, that they ironically didn't, you know, win that Super Bowl. They were so good. You just watch it. You're like, God, that's clear. That's how I felt about Kansas City year in and year out.
He
you
is like nothing
it.
We've ever seen. He okay, is. That's there's well no, there's no
that's
question.
A good way to
he is like nothing we've well ever seen. He is Magic Johnson coming into the NBA, being a 6'9 point guard who wins a title his rookie season, you know, who you're like, oh my God, we've never seen anything like this before. It's fun to watch. He's dominant. This is a way we've never seen the game played before. Everything feels like it's going to change after this, right? And then Michael Jordan came along, and then LeBron came along, or Kobe came along. And you know, so the conversation is always changing. Up until now, I would say, yeah, Patrick is the alien of the NFL. We've never seen this, but I don't know what the end of it looks like. And to me, I think that can the same, you know, it's like I sat and watched Elway for years and years and years. And I'm like, he's just never going to do it. Like, he's always going to be the bridesmaid. It's never going to happen. Then he wins 2 in a row. You have the
changes entire legacy.
You have the helicopter play, right? You have, and then
in
all
a game
of a sudden
where he threw for 119 yards.
But that's the play you remember. When he needed to get it, he got it. And
Terrell
like,
Davis
oh
won
God.
That Super Bowl.
Well,
but yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And to that point, part
but it changed
of this,
everything.
It changed everything.
To that point, part of this will be: do Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen ever get over the Patrick
See, and
Mahomes?
That's
top?
You know, I was, you know, when we're talking about the greatest quarterback of all time, whether it's Mahomes, we do have to at least acknowledge that, like, Mahomes the last couple of years has been good for sure. I think if we're just judging who's
totally
been the
disagree.
Best quarterback in the NFL the last 2 seasons, not counting team wins, we're talking about Lamar and Josh are probably better. Doesn't
who
that
you,
matter?
But who Frank, are you most scared, who are you most scared to play? I got one game.
Right.
I got one game. I'm blowing the ball.
Yes,
that's exactly
I
the point, especially in the playoffs. And again, I know they're going to announce the MVP tonight. And while we can't say who we voted for, I can tell you Patrick Mahomes was not number one on my ballot. But I think that even so, I would trust him more in the playoffs. And I still think he can ultimately do more. And that's what I also think is interesting. What Patrick is able to do athletically and from an arm talent standpoint is so different than what we saw from Brady, even if Brady's mind was operating at such a high level. And Patrick's mind is also operating at an extremely high level.
So.
But there's a difference in what they're doing.
And it is similar to Brady in the vein of, you know, when you get in these situations, you're scared of him because he's a killer. Like, you're like this, you just don't. And I'll never forget the Super Bowl in Houston, obviously, 28-3, they come back and then they had the mic'd up. I remember watching the mic'd up footage when they went to overtime and the Falcons players are like, man, you don't want to give the ball to Tom, man. Like, you know, and you're like, oh, man, these dudes, they knew. They were like, oh, man, this is like, you could hear it. They were like, this is probably over. Like, we can't give him the ball. It's no, overtime.
I think I've said this line at some point over the past couple weeks on one of these shows. If Philly takes a lead with 2.5 minutes to go, every one of us will have the exact same thought of, well, this game's over. Mahomes going to go win it.
Yep.
Like,
the guys
on
the sideline are going to feel that.
Everybody.
Too.
Every single person in the Superdome will feel
impact.
That's the fear that I think he does have that makes him different.
Fear is a good word for it.
It's just, you know, I want to see how this ends. See, I'm all about it. Like, I look at this and I'm like, yeah, he could have the runway to be. I was always the disbeliever. I'm like, come on. Like, it's a hot start. The NFL, I never thought they would be to this point. Then I look at it now and I'm like, he's shown it's sustainable even in lean years. That completely changes
earliest
the dynamic.
He's ever been eliminated from the playoffs is overtime in the AFC Championship.
Right. That's another part that's going to go into this legacy battle. Even if they don't end up having the 7 Super Bowls or 7 personally, 6 for the team, there is going to be an element is if they're never out of the AFC Championship, if they I don't know how many years the Patriots had the streak for, but I think when you look at that, that is part of this.
Yeah, I do think a big part, real quick, about Brady versus Mahomes is that one other Super Bowl at the Buccaneers, because otherwise we would have been like, well, Patriots, just like we would with Mahomes, Andy Reid. Like, we don't know. Maybe Mahomes wins a Super Bowl with the Buccaneers in 2034.
It's not like it was just reporters and analysts who thought that either. Like, you even heard players
who were
like, oh, no, Montana, this guy, that guy.
And then Brady goes to another team and wins.
That's
when you're like, whoa, like, all right, okay.
Brady's
still at a higher level. And I also think, again, AFC Championship, Brady goes with the Patriots to Arrowhead. And yes, Patrick was early in his career, but Brady wins. He goes to another team, he beats Patrick. What I would be interested in seeing is part of Brady's greatness and Patrick's continued greatness is the mental bank that they built and how they're able to process the game more quickly and diagnose defenses at a higher level as their career goes on. And I would love it if we could see Mahomes and Brady at the same stage of their career playing against one another. And again, obviously not literally on the field at the same time, because that is one of the reasons I think that Brady was able to beat him those 2 times.
That would take like another 10 plus years. I can't handle another 10 plus years of Mahomes on my body again. All right. We'll break down some of the consequences and thoughts on the Eagles. We'll do that after we take a quick break. Welcome back to Inside Coverage from the Toyota Land Cruiser set here at Super Bowl 59. We've talked about the Chiefs. We've talked about the consequence of what could happen for them and their legacy. Let's talk about the other side of this, because it's not that long ago that there were plenty of people, not this show particularly, but plenty of people that were screaming that Nick Sirianni might be fired and that Jalen Hurts sucks. And I just keep thinking about, like, maybe because we're here and there's all this Eli conversation about what it means for Eli's legacy, having beaten Brady. You mentioned it, Frank, earlier. Hurts outplayed Mahomes the first time. Like, for Jalen Hurts, if he comes out and wins this, does that change the way we talk about Jalen Hurts?
Of course, it changes. Every Super Bowl changes legacy for quarterbacks and does change it for Jalen Hurts. It doesn't even matter that they were last in the league in pass attempts, that this is a Saquon Barkley team. Barkley will get his flowers for sure. But yes, one ring for Jalen Hurts. Like we talked about with Elway. Like in Super Bowl 32, Elway wasn't the show. Like he completed 9 passes, 10 passes in that game. It was a very low volume. But who do we credit? We credit John Elway at the end.
Yeah.
Same thing's going to happen to Jalen Hurts. If the Eagles, Saquon Barkley rushed for 200 yards, and at the end of the day, sometime in May, we'll be sitting here saying, well, Jalen's got a ring. That's just the way it goes for quarterbacks.
But how it adjusts is in the longer view of history, it's like Flacco, right? Flacco went on a heater. Unbelievable. And that was a Super Bowl where you could, particularly that run, you could point at Joe Flacco and go, he was a big reason why. You know, he was a huge, it wasn't just the defense.
It was balling.
But then after that, you know, Flacco came back. He came back kind of to the middle. And by the end of it, we're like, yeah, Flacco won a Super Bowl. Like, you know, he had his run, but is Flacco a Hall of Famer? Is he dominant? Like that.
He was comeback player
changed.
Of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was comeback player of the year.
I stand by that.
Yeah, we had to change it because of that vote. They were so mad that Joe Flacco got comeback player. But look, with Hurts, I think it changes it right now, in the now, and it's sort of like, okay, he's got a Super Bowl. There's definitely you're the adult table, right? You get the Super Bowl. Now let's see, how does it adjust outward for
you? What would his stature be like in Philly? It's not a quarterback centric market, really. Like the favorite player of all time probably is Brian Dawkins in Philly, right? Like, so I think they're
more
nuanced.
I mean, look at
the
way they still talk about Nick Foles, right?
Yeah, like, right. That's
he went
what
to
I'm
the
saying.
Super Bowl.
Like,
yeah, like, he's getting a statue
I don't
next
think
to
they
Rocky.
Would talk about Carson Wentz in the same way if he had won that Super Bowl.
You don't? I, no. I, is They win a Super Bowl and Jalen Hurts plays well. Does Jalen Hurts have a statue in Philly at some point? Like, I don't know. Like, I really don't know. I think Philly fans like him that would take him to another level.
It's the Batman thing, right? You know, they love you enough until they hate you or whatever the line was. Like, it's at some point he can win a Super Bowl, but let's be real. It's Philly.
They're going to give credit to someone else.
Well, but I mean, you can also say Saquon, he plays. Let's say he begins to play poorly, right? And then next thing you know, it's two years or 3 years of subpar play. And then it's like, let's get Jalen out of here. And what happens, I think, often in those situations is a player departs, goes place elsewhere. And then after times pass, the city re-embraces him and says, you know, hey, you brought us the Super Bowl. We'll always have that. You know, it's. I think that could be an ending for Jalen, or this could be the ascent. This could be one of
many. We forget. I was actually, it stunned me. Jalen Hurts is a young guy.
Very young, yeah.
Like, he's like 26, yeah. I believe. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of football to be played for Jalen Hurts, and you're right. He wins one this year. Maybe he takes off and wins an MVP like he almost did two years ago.
He might have the record for most offensive coordinators by the age of 26. But there are two elements to this conversation. There's the outside the building element and the inside the building element, which is relevant because maybe inside the building is where you get your statue. But I think when we consider what his legacy will be, what Nick Sirianni's legacy will be, last year Nick Sirianni talk is such a good lens into this, because there's someone who works for the Eagles who always tells me he wants to make a shirt and it says, Philly, where winning is never good enough, because the Eagles fans are not happy even when you win.
That's a really good
all
line.
The time.
That's epic.
So you don't just because you win, that doesn't mean it. So I think there's that outside element of the fans are always like, oh, but the passing game doesn't work. Oh, but we don't care about linebackers. Oh, this, that. And they have all their theories. But I think it would be a little unfair to say that none of this noise is going on inside, because I was in Tampa Bay last year for the wild card round when the Eagles lost. And I was in that post game locker room and with Jalen Hurts when he was asked about Nick Sirianni and if he supported Nick Sirianni, who again had taken them to the Super Bowl the year before, not 10 years ago, 1 year earlier. They had started the season 10-1, and Jalen was like, oh, is that a question? And would refuse to voice positively and affirmatively support for Nick Sirianni. And Jalen's an interesting cat who I've been trying to understand from a lot of people, and I have not yet figured it out. I asked Brian Daboll at the Senior Bowl, I'm like, can you explain this guy to me? You were his offensive coordinator at Alabama. I didn't get an answer that really helped me understand more, but I do think there's an element of some of this is the way that the players and coaches and general manager are answering questions.
So let's stick with the coach for a second on this, because Sirianni is also part of this conversation. Is there a lesson for all of us? Because Jory, you mentioned earlier, like, teams start out a certain way and they evolve and they get better over the course of the year, which is exactly what we've seen, frankly. I mean, we've given Kellen Moore his flowers on this show. We've given Sirianni his flowers on this show. Is there a lesson that we should learn about sort of patience?
Well, there's a lesson about a coach who's willing to adjust to what the front office wants, what ownership wants. Like, I there's no question in my mind, as much as Howie will say it or Jeff Lurie might say it, or, you know, some changes that happened on that coaching staff, there's no doubt that the general manager felt like there need to be some alterations to your staff. And it wasn't that's not the first time it's happened. We've talked about Doug Peterson before, when Doug said, I want a Super Bowl for you. I'm good. I'm not making any more of these changes. So if I got to go, I got to go, but I'm not going to do this. Whereas I think Sirianni was like, okay, we got to make some, you know, Kellen Moore comes in as OC. I think Howie was definitely part of that, you know, decision happening, and it's worked out well. But I think the one thing Sirianni is showing us is he's a little more chameleon-like than maybe we thought. You know, he's willing to make changes. He's been emotional at times, but he's also reined it in. One of the things that Howie said to Jory and I that I thought was interesting was something that stuck out that he really that kind of opened his eyes a little bit about Sirianni was when he started to hear players repeat things that Sirianni would tell them.
They do
them.
It all the
time.
Yeah,
they do.
Like, you, like word for word. Like, I, you know, I heard Jalen Hurts say what Nick said. I heard Saquon say what Nick said. I heard, you know, Carter say what, you know, I mean, it's, so I think it's interesting to kind of hear that. And in the Eagles organization and in with Howie, you're not just there fighting to get the fan base to accept you. You're not just there fighting to get Lurie to accept you. You're fighting to get Howie to accept you, because Howie is a person who every year, if you fall short, and he said it to us, you know, he told us himself, like, he's reinventing himself constantly because he had the GM spot, then he didn't have it, then he had it again. And, you know, so you're, it's it's crabs in a barrel in Philly a little bit. Like, you're always fighting that.
What's amazing to me is this is partly about what Nick Sirianni is and partly about what he isn't. So what is Nick Sirianni? Nick Sirianni is an emotional guy, and he leans into that. You could say maybe he's less emotional, but he's authentically emotional. And I think externally people are like, oh, why is he yelling at the fans? Why is he doing this? But first of all, the criticism he gets, I truly believe that Nick Sirianni believes you criticize him, great. Now you're not spending that time criticizing his players, and he doesn't care. And there's an element of, if Nick can be who he wants to be, then AJ can bring the book to the sideline. And I don't know, Jalen Carter can do, I don't know if we want him doing all of what he can do. Bad example. Zach Bond can find the confidence to do what he wants to do.
Another just... Don't let that one swing
by. I was wondering where that was going. I
Boy, that one just okay. drove by quickly. Go ahead.
Anyway, on the other hand, part of this, and I know that this is my new obsession of late, is how personalities on a coaching staff, on a team, and everything mold together. I actually wasn't sure, and I really like Kellen Moore, and I worked with him in Dallas. I was not sure this would work out because I was thinking, well, Nick and Jalen have this tension, and they both have pretty strong personalities, and Kellen is not an outspoken guy. How are you going to manage this? And instead, it was the opposite. It's that Kellen being super smart, super detailed, and even keeled helped manage the tension between them and helped figure out of like, hey, he can speak to each of them in the way they want. And I think one big part of Nick Sirianni's legacy will be when Kellen Moore is no longer there, which we all expect to happen in a few days when the Saints announce him as their head coach. Who will be the next offensive coordinator, whether Nick chooses him or Howie? And can that dynamic still work for Nick and Jalen and all the different pieces on the team?
And you know what's interesting about this? You do see this in organizations where I remember in the Jets organization when there were times where Parcells and Belichick wanted to kill each other. It was Scott Pioli in the middle who's like, you know, trying to keep mom and dad, you know, like working together. You know, and so when you have two individuals that are high functioning, they're very involved in the success of a team, and then they're similar in those ways. Whereas Howie, like Nick's not the only one to yell at fans. I want to bring that up. Howie went off on fans in Houston because they were holding up a sign saying, "We forgive you." Over the, like, the Jalen Naylor pick. Or who was it? It was Jalen Reagor pick, yeah. And, like, Howie was like, and this is on video, and he's, like, yelling at them, like, I brought you, and he's an effing Super Bowl, and, like, I'm like, the GM,
I
like, yelling
about
at the,
that.
Yeah,
that was
absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah.
So that's, and
that's
by the
Philly.
Way.
That's Philly.
By the way, though, that's more than Nick's ever done. I've never heard Nick cussing about bringing you this or that. But it's accepted with Howie because it's like, and Eagles fans loved it. They're like, that's my GM. Like, that's
it.
So if you're successful, you can do that. I mean, if Sirianni wins the Super Bowl, Eagles fans are going to go, yeah, that's what they're going to, they will fall right in behind that emotion because they feel it too. And it works until it doesn't. But the Kellen Moore thing is so true. I almost asked him the night you and I were talking to Howie, how do you two coexist? Because you are both pretty emotional.
Yeah.
And like, how do you keep from going after each other at certain times, or how does that not? And I never thought about Kellen kind of being a smoothing factor in between. That is true. That's really good.
And it's
good.
The same idea why Brian Flores, I think, is having so much success in Minnesota, and people have different opinions on him, but Kevin O'Connell is so even keeled that it balances it out. Kellen is that guy, and it's not, and then, I mean, Vic's got the fire too, but there are different personalities. I think what's also interesting with Howie is that, I forgot what I was going to say, so carry on.
I will say, as you're talking about Howie, I love that segue. As you're talking about Howie, I think part of the reason I just believe the Eagles are going to continually be good is I just think Howie is that good. Like, every organization that has continual success, I think you can look at it and say, well, this is the reason. And for me, like, we talked earlier about the Chiefs, okay, the coaching, the quarterback, they're going to be in it every year. Just Howie keeps the Eagles in it every stinking year. And for whatever that's worth, I worry less about coordinator changes, coaching changes, player changes, because I just think they have somebody absolutely brilliant running the organization.
Right. And one part of this is I remember last year when they had the press conference with Nick Sirianni and Howie after, it was about a week after that playoff loss. And there's kind of this question of, is Nick coming back? Are the coordinators coming back? Okay, the coordinators are not, but Nick is. And Nick and Howie are sitting up there. And the questions were largely being addressed to Nick. And Howie, like, a couple times would be like, do you have any questions for me? And just saying things like that. And at the time, I was like, can you calm down and, like, just be comfortable that he is the coach? But the reality is that's not the way the power structure is there. And I think what I realized the more I got to know Howie is, I texted this to C-Rob yesterday in a conversation. Obsessive people are going to obsessive people. Like, he's obsessive about things, including the fans. And he cares so much. But that is what's made him so great. That is what's made him so driven. And as he told us, when he got reassigned and basically fired from the GM position from Chip Kelly, and he's now taken different head coaches and different quarterbacks to 3 Super Bowls in 8 years, he kind of took on this personality of, first of all, I'm going to be obsessive about everything, and second of all, I'm not going to care if I ruffle a few feathers, because what's going to happen? I get fired. I've been there.
Already
I've done
got
that.
Fired. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that definitely drives. There's no doubt that's always what's driven him, was that he you know, effectively gets you're no longer the GM. You get moved to the other side of the building.
Yeah,
and then you're that. Like, and then, but then when you get back in that seat, which he admitted, like, I didn't think there was a time where I didn't think I was going to have that opportunity again. When you get back in, you're like, screw it. I'm going to do it my way. Like, if I'm going to get fired, I'm going to get fired doing it my way. And he has done a really good job of, you know, you talk about just him being that continual support beam of success. I thought it was really interesting. A GM said to me, this might have been, I think it was like last year. I asked him about, you know, he's kind of grousing about Howie always getting too much credit coming. Oh, Howie wins every draft. You guys just shut up about Howie already. Do I have to need more tweets about how great Howie's draft was? And I'm like, well, look, man, like I started naming off like all these different guys that Howie had drafted. And he goes, yeah, Howie said, let me draft SEC guys who are really fast and in these programs that are basically pro programs. He's like, and now you want to give him his flowers because he's, hey, let me draft a bunch of SEC guys and they're successful. No kidding. Like, you know, but, you know, to his credit, he did. He saw it. Like, he looked at that Georgia defense and he said, I
give
see
me everybody
ton of,
I can take. Yeah, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm going to take all those guys if I can because they're all fast. They're all big. They're all great athletes. They're well coached. They play the best competition. Yeah, they'll probably make it. And when people were saying about N'Kobe Dean, remember that? He's too light. He's too light of a linebacker. He'll never make it on the NFL level. Never be able to. He's just going to be a guy. That's not now. Granted, you can talk about the injuries and is that a long term concern? But not just the guy. Like Howie was right about that, you know. And there's been a number of players I think like that.
The very concept in the draft of taking the best player on the board is something that. When teams do it, we're like, of course, like what credit? He was clearly the best player. It's not that easy otherwise ever to play. Like, we were sitting together doing the draft this year when Quinyon Mitchell was drafted, and you immediately see Rob was like, this is a great pick, right? And like, it's some, like, the easy thing is hard to do, and Howie Roseman does it incredibly well when it comes to these draft things.
And philosophically, the Eagles don't wait to do things. They don't wait to get their contracts done. They don't wait to re-sign their guys, and they don't wait to get a replacement until the guy is aging. One of the reasons, again, we talked about the offensive line and replacing Jason Kelce, because they weren't afraid to use a second-round pick on a center, even when he was going to be the backup for a couple of years. They really do get ahead of a lot of things.
Good point. That's well said by you. All right. Before we get out of here, this is our last time hanging out before the Super Bowl. So let's go down the row and give the picks. See, Rob, how's the game going to play out?
So I picked at the start of it's funny because I was just telling Frank this. So I'll tell you what I told Frank. I picked the Chiefs at the beginning because it's just I learned the hard way. Like how many times can you pick against them and get burned? But as I told Frank, I truly deep down believe this Philly team. Probably wins this game. I'm still picking the Chiefs,
right?
But this is one where when I look at the two, Philly is this is it. They are prepared. They have the talent. They have everything there. So deep down, I think Philly's going to win this game, but I'm not picking them. I'm not picking against Mahomes. I'm picking Mahomes and the Chiefs.
I had some degree of similarity, and the reason also being that the Chiefs are coming off playing the Bills. Like that was a Super Bowl caliber game. And credit to the Commanders for how far they got. But what the Eagles just did against Washington, they're going to have to do it against a different caliber of players, different caliber of, I mean, I think quarterback
experience.
At this point, even though Jaden Daniels is doing defense, all of that. So I picked the Chiefs 34-31. But I agree with you. I do think the Eagles have a more complete team. But it's those big moments that Patrick Mahomes,
Andy
Reid.
Don't you think being here too affected that? Like, as we've been here.
Yeah.
And I've kind of looked at it and you talk to more
people.
The Eagles
should win. If it was a regular season game, the Eagles would win.
Yeah, I went back and forth. And usually this is the first time being at a Super Bowl where I really don't have a strong opinion. Not that I'm right on many of my opinions, but I usually at least figure out who I want think is going to win.
Are you okay?
Keep going back and forth.
Someone tip checked.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
But I'm taking the Eagles, yeah. I think 21-19.
Did you take them at the start of the postseason?
No. I didn't take them at the start of even after the conference
you
championship
game.
I said,
in the game, right?
I said okay. Right after a conference championship game.
No, that's
games,
what I'm
said,
saying. So you have the stones to switch.
I'm not,
I just
yes,
don't.
I said, how could you pick against Chiefs? How could you pick against Chiefs? Part of it is I've really liked the way the Eagles have gone about their business this week. Maybe I'm allowing that to affect me, but I just think they're a more mature team than they were 2 years ago. And I just look at that defense and say, how can the Chiefs beat this defense? And I don't have an answer for that. I really don't. And I also think the Chiefs are going to make Jalen Hurts make plays, and he's going to do it. I think I picked Jalen Hurts to win MVP. I think the Eagles win this game. Give me the under. DeAndre Hopkins anytime touchdown. And you want me to go through my whole menu here?
Yeah. Who's going to be the guest at the halftime show? I had to Google that stuff. I'm like, I don't even know who the halftime show is.
Did you know who Kendrick Lamar was?
Of him.
No, the halftime show is going to suck. I'm sorry. I'm going to say, look, there's a key to a halftime show. A great halftime show is a high energy, like everybody bounces up and down, everybody jumps up and down. The reason that Usher, I thought last year was a weird pick, even though I'm a massive Usher fan, is because like he makes baby making music, and that's just not great for a halftime. Like halftimes are supposed to be like everybody jumps up and down and has a great. The reason that Bruno Mars did a great halftime show in New York at the Super Bowl is because he only played his fastest hits that were all the same tempo, and the whole stadium just jumped like maniacs.
I'm so happy you're getting this out of your chest. It seems like this has been Kendrick's
great. I really like Kendrick Lamar's music. I just think for halftime it's a bad fit. It won't have the right energy for a halftime show.
This Super Bowl, and we haven't talked about this, but I mean, like, its Super Bowl has a chance to be weirdly what President Trump's going to be here. First president in history.
I didn't know that until last night.
Yeah, no president's ever come to a Super Bowl. So you got a president's coming. Taylor Swift, right? Like, there's the dynamic of what happened leading up in the election. Kendrick Lamar at halftime, who's not the, you know, Kendrick Lamar went through, there's been some stuff
Brady's
with Kendrick Lamar and Drake.
God, I want Tom Brady to be a special guest. Please bring Drake
Tom
out.
Brady's calling the game. Like, you've got the three-peat aspect of it.
It's Saquon's birthday on Sunday.
Is Travis Kelce going to propose? Like, there's all the, it's just a Super Bowl where I'm like, man, there's a lot of weird stuff that's kind of all coming together
here. So
basically
none of our post-game stories are going to be about the game, right?
Pretty much.
I do think.
He's right about Kendrick, yeah.
Frank, I'll say, I think you're right. They're going to force Jalen Hurts to try and beat him. Fine. I don't think he can. I think that the pre-snap recognition is going to be so key for Jalen Hurts on where the blitz is coming from, where they're sending who from Spags defense. You've given Andy Reid an extra week to dial something up. I think one or two mistakes makes it. One mistake could be the difference in this game. I don't believe the Chiefs will make that mistake. I watch it over and over and over again. Mahomes has four plays to make. He makes them. I think late in the game, the Chiefs get the ball. The Chiefs do what they always do. They drive down the field.
Am I the only one officially picking the Eagles here?
Yeah.
We wish we did, but we didn't.
I kind of like the idea of confetti falling and Travis Kelce jumps on a knee and proposes.
There was so much confetti at the NFC Championship. It just kept coming more and more and more.
By the way, over at BetMGM, Travis Kelce proposing +800 if you want to get in on that action.
What does that speak about the degenerative of degenerate, I should say, that is Frank Schwab. That's what's beautiful. You can get more betting advice by following him on social media. No, just follow him there. If you've listened this far, rate, review, subscribe. We really appreciate it. I will, again, loudly say that we've done some tremendous work and will continue to work throughout the week in the Yahoo Sports app, Yahoo YouTube page, wherever you get your podcast. Check it out. Everybody that you could possibly imagine has come through this set and has been a part of it. So it's been a really incredible experience. Plus, everybody sitting to my left is working their ass off out here writing incredible stuff on this game. So if you haven't checked it out, you should check it out. Rate, review, subscribe. Tell us how much you enjoy the show. It means a lot. It helps us a lot in our process. We appreciate it. Follow us on social media. You know the drill. In the meantime, we appreciate you guys listening to this show and every show that has come to you from the Toyota Land Cruiser set at Super Bowl 59. Hot rumor is Jory gets the Land Cruiser afterwards, but only if she can get in it without using a step stool.
And she has.
I live in New York. What do I need a car for?
She has to sit on her backpack to see over the wheel, just like she had to.
Guys, it is hard on some rental cars.
All I want in my life is to watch Jory get in on one side and C-Rob get in on the other side and figure out which one looks more comfortable.
And drive without a radio road through everyone. Just act like it's a normal thing.
It's perfect. Thank you guys so much for listening. We appreciate it. Keep checking us out. Thank you so much.
Wow.